this industry, it's crazy overregulated. Nuclear power seems a little more dangerous, but any random person can sign up for the MIT College Tour and they show you the nuclear reactor. You get to look at it. We have none of that.
This is the Canamom Show, a podcast chronicling the inspiring stories of real women in the emerging cannabis industry. Your host, Joyce Gerber, mom, lawyer, political activist, has been speaking with women from coast to coast and around the world who are leaders in the revolution of cannabis and caregiving, continuing on her mission to lift up the stories of the women creating the cannabis industry by sharing their canna stories with you. So go make yourself a cup of tea or roll yourself a joint, sit back, and learn something new about this magical plant on The Canna Mom Show with Joyce Gerber.
From the Tip O'Neill Studios in North Cambridge, Massachusetts, it's The Canna Mom Show. Now here's your host, Joyce Gerber.
And welcome back to The Canna Mom Show, where we continue on our mission of crushing cannabis stigma.
Crushing it, Dave.
There's so much going on. So yesterday was like literally the most pathetic snowstorm in New England. I don't know what happened to you.
We actually got some snow in Foxborough, but yeah, it was. I felt like it was all melted within like a couple hours afterwards. A little bit of rain, slush. Yeah, two out of three storms don't live up to the hype, right?
How could I get it so wrong, though?
Because they've been doing this to us since Shelby Scott was standing out in the snow in 1976. It's like they keep the worse they tell us it's going to be, the more they know we're going to tune in. So they got us right where they want us.
That's true. That's a good point. All right. So not just snow. Super Bowl. Did you watch? Everyone in America seemed to be watching.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Yes, okay.
It was fine. I fell asleep. It went way too late.
All right.
I don't know how they expect us to
I fell asleep, too, and my husband next to me. Yeah. I know, and I woke up, and I'm like, shit, they won.
Yeah. I was surprised. Yeah, I was surprised the Chiefs won. But
we the only one.
We had our Taylor Swift did not endorse Joe Biden at the end of the game. So.
And the world did not implode, and that was just a really weird conspiracy theory. But you got a lot of people hyped up, so whatever.
Yeah.
All right, and it's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you.
And Ash Wednesday. So many things going on today.
I saw a sign outside of a church that I drove by which said, Lent is coming. Get your ashes in church. Get it. Get it. Ashes. Yeah. Okay.
That's what we do. Pot, politics, and religion. That's what we do here. Mm-hmm. Speaking of politics, hey, did you listen to the Supreme Court argument? I know you're a lawyer, dude. About Colorado and whether or not they're going to let him keep him on the ballot. And they did it live. I heard it.
No. I'm embarrassed to say. I saw all the Super Bowl commercials, but I didn't hear the Supreme Court. So what was that like?
Okay, as a like kind of a legal nerd, you'd appreciate just like hearing the oral arguments and how they actually present themselves. And I think, Clarence Thomas asked the first questions twice. Like, he never even used to speak.
I think he figures now that he's been exposed as a fraud, he has to earn his keep, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, but although I'd love to keep the orange man off of the ballot. There is a compelling thing to be said for the fact that why should Colorado get to determine who's on a presidential ballot, right? I mean, I think it's a good argument.
It's also that weren't they like we have this constitution that everyone says we live by, and this is pretty clear. Like, I almost think it's reversed. It's like the 14th Amendment took away some of the state's rights because the states are doing shitty stuff, and they put this wording in there: insurrectionists cannot be on the ballot, cannot run, or not hold office, whatever the words are. It's almost like it's compelling them because that was one of Robert's arguments. He said, if the 14th Amendment is taking away states' powers, how could Colorado have the power to do this? It was sort of like backwards. And then Kagan was like, why should Colorado say they alone can make this decision? But to me, I could see it as the reverse. States are required to do the Article 2. They're required to do elections or have the powers over elections. And 14th is saying you are mandated to keep insurrectionists off, just like you're mandated to keep anyone too young off. But nobody made that argument, Dave. Nobody.
Where were you, Joyce? They needed you. They needed you and I, the two non-lawyer lawyers.
Whatever. Anyway, it was interesting. I don't think they're going to rule with them, but maybe they won't let them be immune.
I am okay with the concept generally that insurrectionists should not be able to run for president. It's kind of like pick a lane.
I'm good with it. All right. So I don't know. I'm not running the world. Let's change the subject. Tyler Perry. Do you know Tyler Perry? You a fan?
Of course. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan, but his successes are undeniable for sure.
So I watched him on this random video thing yesterday I was watching, but he's really interesting. And I just like everything about him, but he was talking about how social media is probably the reason why we're all so like mentally ill. And I'm like, I agree. Like, it makes me nauseous and mm-hmm. it never feels good. And I'm a grown ass woman. Mm. Like, what's it doing to our kids?
Oh, there's no question. Yeah. There was a good Netflix documentary on that a couple of years back about how day to day it affects people. And over again, they want to get that. What's it? It's not serotonin.
Dopamine.
Dopamine. That's it. Right. Yeah. The dopamine rush. And then you're constantly chasing that. And every road leads to bad things. And we're too in tune with everything, you know?
Yeah. That's why we need pot. That's why we live. Okay, over now with my show and my mission. Hemp guitar. Before we move on, hemp guitar, it is in full swing, the hemp guitar campaign. We have an agreement with the Goods Dispensary in Somerville, Massachusetts, who will be displaying the hemp guitar in the month of April. And you can smoke it. You can play it. It's really cool. Josh and I have been making the rounds on podcast. We're a good team. We were talking about the moment I forgot him at home when he was 7 on the last podcast. So you never know what sort of things will be revealed.
Oh, man. Was he okay? I obviously, he was okay.
He proved to be resilient, and he could take care of his sister, I will say.
How old was his sister at the time?
He was 8, 7, 8, 5, and 7. I don't know. I was a lawyer. I was busy. I wasn't smoking pot. I was just one of those women who was so way too, and I had too much going on. I was leaning way too far in.
Right.
My husband went to work. I went to work.
They're fine. They know where the cereal is, right? They know where the toilet is.
So, yeah. So it was actually, it's actually the moment when I decided maybe I need to step back, but it's a good story and he's fine. So anyway, so you never know what's going to come up if you invite me and Josh to be your guest on a podcast, and he'd love to talk about the hemp guitar. So there we go.
Yes, we're going to get you. We're going to get you on our music podcast, Past Tens. I'm still just trying to work out the details, but we got to. Okay. I mean, I want that guitarist on our show for sure.
Going to be good. All right. I was going to do just a quick culture corner, just a quick little podcast recommendation. All right.
Culture Corner.
All right, so this is sort of like a bummer downer thing, but I think it's important. I just lost my cat, so I'm going through a moment of grief. And Anderson Cooper does this great podcast called All There Is.
I haven't heard of it.
It's about grief, and obviously everybody goes through this. I don't know if I'm just one of those people when I'm sad, I want to be really sad, and I just go deeper into it. Like, I watch sad movies. I don't know. I need to feel it. So this is a really interesting podcast to listen to, a lot of different stories. Anderson Cooper has a lot of loss in his life. He talks about it openly. And grief is a hard thing to work with a lot of times. And it's just good to hear. It's kind of like cannabis. It's like once you hear the stories, you want to tell your own. So, yeah, all there
is. Yeah, very. That sort of thing is very therapeutic. That's why I always say, as counterintuitive as it may seem, everyone should go to one funeral a year at least or more. Because I don't know about you, funerals to me often bring out the best in people. You hear things that children say about their parents that you've never heard them say before, and it's incredibly sad. But at the end of the day, there's a healing.
There's a community. You come together. I don't know. We come together. We always say that. Let's come together for a better time. But the family will come together in sorrow. Sorrow finds you, people. That's the kind of thing about looking for joy with cannabis is. Sorrow's there. Comes up, it's there. But if you got to look for joy, that's why we... The putting positivity out there is important because you can live in the negativity. There's a lot of sorrow out there.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, but if you are in sorrow and you're having grief, it's important to feel it. So it's like everything. It's a double-edged sword.
I did a reaction video listening to the new Billy Joel song for the first time, and I cried I cried like 3 times. It was pathetic. It was so nostalgic and wistful, and it just I don't even know what I was crying about, but it made me cry.
That's the beauty of music. There's like something about music. You put tones together and it triggers something in you and you need to release it. I mean, we can introduce the guest in a minute, but I am a religious person and I at Jewish services every Friday night, you say prayer for the dead and you think about it and it's like a journey through it. And when my mother and people are sick, it really releases something. It's something about repeating the same words over and over again. It must be like a psychedelic mental thing. But yeah, it's something very therapeutic about that.
Yeah, there is always like a calm silence in temple when they do the Kaddish, and it always does. It stops and it makes you think about people that aren't here anymore and how much they meant to you. And all right, now I'm going to start crying. All right.
There you go, the Canada Mom Show. You never know what you're going to hear. All right, Dave, thank you for indulging your sadness and your therapy. It's a little can of therapy session today. But today we actually have a guest. So moving on. Today's guest is the CEO of 1620 Partners LLC, a cannabis risk management and compliance consultancy firm. She bridges the gap between passion for the plant and regulatory requirements in the legal cannabis marketplace across the country. She is also a compliance assistant navigating the complex environment of legal cannabis compliance and risk management challenges while remaining current on industry procedures and regulations. Her success includes helping small, medium, and large cannabis organizations comply with state regulations throughout the organizational life cycle. Here to share her Canna Why, the importance of compliance in cannabis, and of course, what it's been like to become a Canna Mom. Please welcome to the Canna Mom Show, Melissa Rutherford. Welcome.
Thank you. That is such a nice introduction. I'm going to give you a scoop.
Yeah.
So 1620 Partners has changed names.
Oh, okay.
So we're now Cobblestone Solutions, and we went from 3 to 2. So it's now a wholly owned, women-only business. My partner, Rebecca, who is here with me today, is...
Yeah, why don't we do this? We're going to be like a surprise extra guest. So can you just give a quick introduction of your partner, and we'll kind of move forward with sharing your story.
Yeah, Rebecca, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me. I got into the cannabis industry back in 2016, right when medical marijuana passed in Massachusetts. And then
and these are both Massachusetts women. I didn't actually say that.
Yes.
Massachusetts absolutely. Cannabis women. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Born and bred.
So happy.
So happy about that. Yes. And then started my own company back in 2019, Cobblestone Integrated Solutions, and had a wonderful experience where my path crossed with Melissa's when she was crushing it in the cannabis world en masse. And we really hit it off and we complement each other very well. We provide anything from inspection assistance to internal audits,
all the stuff that it's the boring stuff that has to happen because this is a compliance industry. It's really not that fun, people. So let's start in the beginning. Everybody gets into this because they have a why. I mean, that's sort of like people are staying in it and coming into it. I don't know. Let's start with Melissa. So let me just sort of like, what was your relationship with cannabis? We're all in Massachusetts. I talk a lot about how in 2016 I had a cannabis awakening. I didn't know everybody was on the pot. I had no idea it was going to pass. So this was not my world. So where were you prior to this, and how did you get? What is your why for being in this industry?
So my original why for being in the industry was somebody was going to pay me to move to stay in Massachusetts because I was commuting 50% of my time to lovely, lovely Atlanta, Georgia. Wonderful people, very nice. No ocean. No mountains, no nothing, except lots and lots of highways and lots of lawful travel distance. And so there was this opportunity. I have a compliance background. I wasn't sure if it was F-L-O-W-E-R or F-L-O-U-R when people were talking about cannabis flower. I mean...
And what year was this?
This was 2019.
Oh, so you're a late bloomer. Okay.
Oh, hugely late. My guidance counselor, like in high school somewhere, is going, what the hell happened to that student? What is she doing? But I have 15 plus 20 years of compliance, program management, building, regulatory opportunities in my head. And so I was headhunted and I interviewed with the CEO of a vertically integrated medical and adult use cannabis, whose response to me was, I have to have compliance. I don't care about compliance, but I want my license and I want a successful business. And I said, I can give you that, but I don't know anything about this. And he said, oh, that's easy. I can solve that problem. And he wasn't wrong. And so I was like, goodbye to the Georgia. Wonderful people. Thank you for the opportunity. See you later. I'm going back on the plane and staying in New England. I want to go home. And so that was great. And then as I was transitioning out of one role into the new role, in the space of about 3 weeks, month maybe at the outside, My grandmother was diagnosed with throat cancer, and she was going to start the good fight, came home from her house in Florida to be in Connecticut to get, because she was close to New York City, to get the cancer doctors there. She didn't trust where she was. And they basically said, let's make you comfortable. You're 92. Okay. Let's make you comfortable. There's not a lot here. And she said, okay. But she flatly refused to take opioids. She knew what that meant. She was married to a doctor. It wasn't the end of life experience she wanted. So she went home, and Connecticut at the time had as it has today, medical marijuana, but it was very much like Mass in 2016. You had to get a doctor's approval. You had to go through 4 million things. You had to send away 2 box tops to get your card. So there may have been some family members who may have visited.
Right.
And I have a very unique experience with funerals, as I have been to more funerals than weddings, and I'm not that old. Aww. And I'm very experienced with end of life from a small child's perspective, a teenager's perspective, and now an adult's perspective. Mm. And I was not looking forward to visiting her because those tend to be not fun.
No.
There's nurses and doctors, there's beeping materials, you don't know what the hell's going on. She was home. I was expecting her to be emaciated because she couldn't eat, pretty much non-interactive. But I love my grandmother very much. She's very important to certain aspects of my life. And I steeled myself because that's what a good grandkid does. And I went. And I had no idea. Zero. None. Ninguno. I'm really pissed about all the people who told me all the wrong things after this awakening with medical cannabis or cannabis in general and what it meant. My grandmother was chipper, 92 years old, dying of throat cancer and chipper, could not speak because of the throat cancer, was fully dressed, was eating food. It was actually the day I visited her was the day Tiger Woods won his last green jacket. She loved golf. She was a Tiger fan. So not that I care per se about golf, but we bonded watching the golf game. And then...
Oh, I'm getting the chills. I'm literally getting the chills.
She was cognizant. She knew who I was.
Yeah.
She was happy. She napped. 92, cancer. Like, you take a nap in the middle of the day. It's a thing. And my aunt, who was her main caretaker, looked at me and said, hi, you're here. Guess what? I'm going to kickboxing class because I need to relieve some stress. And I was like, okay, what do I need to know? And she said, your grandmother's taking a nap. She's in that her living room became her bedroom. She's there. You can stay here. You can turn the TV on. She'll sleep through anything. But if she wakes up and she's in pain, get this tincture out of the fridge and give it to her. Okay. Anything else? Nope. That's fine. That's all she needs. Okay. She's like, good. See you in 2 hours. I was like, go have fun. Go beat on things. I get it.
Yeah.
So grandma's napping. It's me in the house. I'm kind of walking around exploring some nostalgia things, opening cabinets I wasn't allowed to as a kid, you know, the things you do. Yeah. And I, being on an organized type A kid, I go to the fridge to look at the tincture. I'm looking at a brown bottle with a dropper in it. Nothing. It may have had a brand name on it, but it didn't mean anything to me. And I'm like, dropper. And I pull the dropper out and it doesn't have anything on it.
Measurement?
Nothing.
Wow.
Nothing. I was like, okay, this is not cool. And then I opened a few more cabinets and there's some chocolate. And I was like, well, all right, grandpa, you go. Fortunately, she napped the entire time. When my aunt came back, several of my uncles showed up as well. My grandmother had six children, and I'm one of 20-something grandchildren.
Wow.
So they started doing things. They put the tincture in some honey, put the honey on a biscuit. She ate the biscuit. I was like, whatever she eats is great. But I was able, while she was awake, to tell her I loved her, to have a conversation with her. Obviously, she couldn't speak in the same way we're doing now. But I could say, I just want you to know that one of my fondest memories is when you took me to the MFA when I was 8 for the first time. And if you didn't know, that inspired me to get my history degree, and that love of learning and knowledge has led me to where I am today. And I just want you to know that. And then she went to bed at 7 p.m. because, again, 92. And I had a great day. And I have other memories with other extended family and grandparents that aren't that positive.
That that is like, I mean, those are stories I hear a lot about. Yeah. But again, the whole idea that this is medicine that comes in a weird brown bottle and there's no even measurements on the measuring, it's a little tricky. This is how people for most of humanity kind of healed themselves. We've just used to like a more compliant oriented medical because we live in this era, but it is possible to make it more compliant and regulatory and consistent, which is why you guys are kind of here. But all right, so that was a big why. Yeah. Rebecca, so were you a cannabis person prior to 2016 or so? And yeah, what's your why for being in this industry?
Yeah, I will say I used cannabis when I was younger and through college here and there. When I graduated college, there was a time period where I really wasn't a cannabis user at all and stumbled into the industry like I think a lot of people do and was approached by someone who wanted to start a business and said, listen, I met this woman and she's amazing. You have to speak with her. And so I took the time, I spoke with her. She was really at the forefront of trying to bring medical marijuana to her town for her child who was having seizures.
Interesting. And what year was that?
That was in 2016.
Okay.
Right when medical marijuana passed in Massachusetts. Right. And I was in shock and in awe, I think, at that time that cannabis was used as a medicine. I really didn't have a clue. I do not have a science background whatsoever. English major, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wish I was an attorney, but English major. And it really opened my eyes. I was really just taken aback by her desire and her drive and how much it really meant to her child and that it would be life-changing, life-altering. And then I recognized cannabis as a plant and as a medicine. And I turned back to that gentleman who approached me and said, let's do this, right? Let me help you in any way.
So what did you do to help them? What were you?
I actually was his executive director to help get him through the local municipality. So helping find sites, and then get his application, get his license, and then help build out the facility.
So you saw early on, like, this is a local rule. We're in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Each town gets to decide what they want to do. I talk a lot about the host agreements, which that's a whole other discussion. But in the beginning, you had to be medical. You had to be vertically integrated, right?
Correct. And Joyce, I mean, I could tell you story after story where we went to some local towns and I had a woman approach me at one point and she said, I'm going to find you in 10 years and talk to you about all the children that you're going to kill. And I was horrified. I mean, I was horrified. I lost sleep over it that night.
Just because you believe it, people, doesn't make it true. So we've lived in this story for a very long time. And it's people like you who are coming forward who have grandmothers who live in Connecticut and women who wear pearls and are talking about this at a very professional level to say, this is how people, how people through all of history have always kind of used this plant medicine. And it's been illegal for a ridiculous story. And we're trying to bring it back. And you're being brave when you come in and do this, especially the moms. The moms are the bravest.
Yeah. Well, and she was a mom. And I think it really opened my eyes. And the reason why I brought that up is because it opened my eyes to the fact that, hey, I had to educate myself that this is actually a plant and medicine. Right. And it's helping people. Right. So now my message when I go out there to try and help someone find a location in a town really has to be education now, which was something I didn't anticipate at all early on.
That's interesting. And it is, I think this is back to like human behavior. No one wants to believe that what they believe is wrong. No one wants to believe that. And if you've held on to this belief for so long that this is so dangerous, that you have to go to prison, that we've justified sending people to prison, you have to really believe it. So I find these stories of healing are really the things that are changing people's hearts and minds because they can see someone they love and they can see something change. And then it opens up a space. And I interviewed someone who was making CBD pet products. And she said that's happening with pets and humans. So they'll see their pet who they love use a CBD product and feel better, and then they'll try it as a human. So it's these small stories, I think, that are going to change the bigger story, but that's kind of where you started, that a personal story. So, all right. So that was a while ago, but you stayed in.
He jumped in at that point.
And again, this is a really hard industry. Everyone, I talk about it endlessly. Everyone I meet, the women I talk to, are literally becoming the people they needed, which sounds like what you guys are doing too. So talk to me about, it's Cobblestone now. Is that the name of the?
It is. Yeah.
Okay. Who wants to talk about Cobblestone and what you were doing out there? Yeah.
So I'll explain how Rebecca and I met.
Okay.
And so I was doing what I knew how to do, but this industry, first of all, it's crazy overregulated. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, nuclear power seems a little more dangerous, but any random person can sign up for the MIT College Tour and they show you the nuclear reactor. You don't get to look at the rods, but you get to look at it. They have windows. We have none of that. So I definitely needed a guiding hand, and my CEO had a contact, and that introduced me to Rebecca, who at the time was in working with a third party as well.
Rebecca kind of knew the industry because you'd just been in it. You'd like gone through the trenches and tried to figure out how to get a space and talk to municipalities and realized how sucky and hard and complicated this is. But you were on a mission to help a mom. And Melissa came into it from, you know how the compliance works. You understand how important it is to like dot I's, cross T's and follow all the rules, even if the rules are absurd. So you kind of, that seemed to be the connection.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And so personality wise, we were just zinging off one another that first day. It was hilarious. And I was like, this is a lady I would like to have a glass of wine with, because I, at that point we hadn't started producing yet. So I hadn't started my taste testing as we will. I am still low and slow. 5 milligrams is fine. Thank you very much. But, you know, we just connected, and then I would have a question or have like, what is the angle on this? And where Cobblestone was working daily with our investigative team and our legislative team and our commission, I'd be like, hey, how does this feel? Oh, X, Y, and Z. And then I'd get a random surprise inspection. I'd call, hey, I got an inspection today. This is the information I think you might want to know. And we started working together around what we were both doing. And I really consider Rebecca my mentor in this, because she had already gone on her own, right? And started doing that. So I've been so grateful that she's been willing to work with me and take me under her wing. And it's just been, I think, a very mutual respect. And we have complementary skills. We have the same set of skills in different angles in different areas. And it's just been invaluable, especially because today Cobblestone works with an awful lot of accidental business owners, people who never expected to be able to take their passion for something and turn it into a viable business. But what hangs over that ability is the fear mongering and the regulation and the insanity and the host community agreements and all the things and the stigma. Rebecca, I'm sure, has a million stories, but I have sat in plenty of meetings and listened to people tell me that by trying to license this or trying to get a permit or trying to open a business, that I was killing people and that I was causing harm. And the children don't, there's 2 miles away, there's an elementary school.
I always pull this back. I'm like, I used to be a family law attorney, and it's always about the children. Always about the children. The standard is in the best interest of the children, and no one ever does anything in the best interest of the children. So the children, we're mothers, we're concerned, we're caregivers, and the plant is a caregiver. This industry should be developed in her image, because that is what this plant does. She gives care, and we do too. So let's talk about compliance, because
you appreciate it as well.
Risk management. It's so important in this industry. I know you're invested in helping other people who want to be in this industry do it right, so they're in compliance, because there are a lot of risks to this and it's very expensive. And we have the 280E and we have the criminalized stuff and blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. So there's a lot of compliance. So what are you guys doing differently? There's a lot of people out there who want to help in this industry. I meet a lot of women specifically who want to help other business owners. But what do you think you're doing differently? And you're not just in Massachusetts, right? You're national?
We're national, yes.
Yeah. Which is, again, each state is very different. So, yeah. What are you guys doing that's different? Whoever wants to talk about that.
I think what we do that's just a little bit different than some of the other groups out there and individuals that are trying to help with risk management, help with compliance, is that we're bringing more operational assistance. We're bringing training. We're bringing some of those additional ancillary but extremely important items to running a business in a highly regulated industry, right? So we can help a group, and it's kind of humorous because we help groups that are extremely small, like family-owned companies, to some of the MSOs have reached out to us and said, can you help us with compliance, right? They have a compliance manager, but because of the interpretation of regulations, it's very difficult at times to figure out, should we do this? Shouldn't we do this, right? Is this on the line of being a little too risky, so to speak? Thank you.
When you're talking about challenges, I do talk a lot about marketing is a challenge. You can't deduct business expenses, you know, how you build your facility. Do you want to talk about maybe like a couple of really the big challenges maybe that are Massachusetts? I don't know if you're going to New York, because I see, like, I keep hoping the new states will like not make the same mistakes the other states made, but it doesn't seem to be what's working. So I don't know, what do you see some of the three challenges here in Massachusetts that maybe other states have saw and maybe corrected, or maybe that they're copying? I don't know. It's an interesting area to be in, to see what's the top three. I'm sure there's like 100. So,
right. Yeah. The top three is definitely difficult for sure. But I think one of the challenges, and maybe this is more from our side of the fence, but one of the challenges that we have is that every state is different, right? Mm-hmm. So you look at some states that have limited the amount of licenses. And so being able to break into that market is a different ballgame versus some other states that it's a rolling application. The requirements, right? So if you're a social equity applicant, that in itself is just such a battle. It's an uphill battle to try and win that license. So I think that's a really big one, because each state has carved out their own way of doing things.
I mean, that is a challenge. I mean, it's just this, and that it's, you can, there's interstate commerce for CBD products, which is now allowing like beverages. Mm-hmm. There are beverages in the regular liquor stores now. It's just, it's very confusing. Like, I don't know if you want to like give a stand, but like, I know there's going to be April 20th. April 18th. There's going to be a lobby day in Washington, D.C., a lot of cannabis organizations coming down to talk about this rescheduling, descheduling, talk to lobbyists. Do you have a stand on going to three would be good? Do you feel like
rescheduling will be horrible. Rescheduling is not what we need at all.
Not yet.
They don't know what they're doing today. How does making it the equivalent of Tylenol with codeine in it a good idea? I think descheduling, there's a lot of value in that, but it's also what exactly does it what does it become? Because it is something that you put into your body, which means the minute it's descheduled, it comes under a whole ton of regulations. The regulatory environment and the risks don't go away. And to date, with a couple of exceptions, New York being one of them, but they're not enforcing it, there aren't standards for cannabis production, specifically edibles, beverages, so on and so forth, that meet the standards of a can of Coke, right? Like, that seems a little insane. Or if we're going to call it medicine, or if we're going to have medical specific products developed, not just an Oreo cookie or just a brownie or just a gummy, then we have manufacturing requirements that don't exist today. So trying to get to that next level, we're not ready for it. The industry is not ready for it.
It's actually interesting to me. So I don't know if it's interesting to anybody else. So the regulation. So how does that even happen? So again, like, how we got to be where we are was a complicated story. But now that we know that's a silly story, we're kind of untangling it. So, like, you know, in the law, you have standards set up. They've been taking forever. I don't know how they even happened to begin in the beginning. But I know, how do we do this with regulations for cannabis? Like, who does it? Who's starting it? You know, Where's the beginning, and like, where does it have to go for it to be like a real industry?
It's so from the, excuse me, somebody likes to participate quite a bit. But so from the United States perspective, holistically, it has to come out of Schedule One. Why it's still in Schedule One is beyond me. Marinol has been available for about a decade, maybe a little longer. That's a medicine made from cannabis. Like, duh, it's Schedule One declares no medicinal value. So it should have been descheduled a decade ago at a minimum. But to bring it into a comfortable business, there's going to have to be a series of decisions made. First of all, it has to come out of Schedule One and it has to go somewhere up to and including descheduled. But when that happens, whatever the decision is, and I know what I would prefer, descheduling, then you're running a legit business that can get access to funding, small business loans, and has a regulatory environment because you are making a consumable. It doesn't matter what kind of consumable it is, whether you're smoking it and putting it in your body or you're transforming it into an oil and making a salad dressing or an oil for cake mixing, whatever it is, it comes into the body. That's going to require oversight. It could be the Federal Drug Administration. It could be, I know the names change, but whatever the old Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, because you're smokable, so there's the tobacco relations. It could come under alcohol as a separate entity, or it could come under all of them, which is just a nightmare.
What about a new one? Could they create a whole new one just for cannabis?
They could. I don't see the point. I don't want to pay more taxes for bureaucracy, quite honestly. My personal hope is the FDA, because then okay. It comes under, if it's medicine, it goes to good manufacturing standards. It has to meet what every other prescription, what Tylenol has to meet the labeling. It's very clear. People know how to do it. It's some degree cookie cutter because everybody's doing the same thing. Not the end of the world. What happens on the other side when it's not medical, then you have a plethora of initials you can choose from, none of which I think will add value initially. I think they will add more headache, more regulation, which is not necessary, and more confusion. That's my take on it. I know Rebecca and I have talked about this a little bit, and you're not 100% with me on that one, but
what do you think?
I look at it from an owner's perspective, and wow, how scary is this if it does go legal? Because now your manufacturing space does have to be brought up to an extremely high standard if it is FDA, right? You're now looking at cGMP, GLP standards, and it's a different ballgame. And that's when you really need people like Rebecca and Melissa in your life.
what's going to happen when this is a unique situation where a lot of these products are state specific. You can't cross state lines. So allowing a smaller scale of manufacturing, especially like in Massachusetts, like a place that, like, what do you think going to happen in that area? Do you have a sense?
I personally believe that the MSOs will pull out of every small area. Massachusetts is one of them. The electrical costs to grow weed year round is insane. However, I think that much like the beer industry with its smaller producers, I think that will stay. It is my expectation that Massachusetts will continue to have small producers and growers who are looking into specifics. Maybe they're taking classic strains that take 12 weeks rather than 9 weeks for production, right? Maybe
like craft cannabis.
Yeah. Craft cannabis, yeah, 100%. That's going to stay. Every state's going to have that, just like every state has the craft brewery.
And the thing is, we have the infrastructure now. It's already been built. Thank you, MSOs. Yes. Interesting. All right. Oh, my gosh. We're so on time. All right. Craft. All right. Family. We have to talk about cannamomming and family. So, Rebecca, are you a mom?
I am not a mom.
He's a puppy mom.
I'm a dog mom. Proud dog mom.
I did a pet care
last week. I do have nieces. And I just wanted to bring this up really quickly. I know we're short for time, but, you know, my nieces are like my girls, really.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because Irish Catholic, grew up with alcohol everywhere. I mean, yeah, we have our issues in our family with alcohol. I mean, so I think it's good because I have now seen my nieces grow up in a different world, really.
Hopeful. Yeah.
I mean, they know I'm in the industry. Cannabis is talked about in our family. They're not afraid of it. They're not worried about walking into a dispensary. I don't know if, for the record, I can't divulge if they have or have not, but I don't know. I don't know who's listening, right?
But this idea that it's normalized and it's culture. So we live, again, we're Massachusetts people, but alcohol is everywhere. It's totally acceptable. I used to say I could pick up my kids at school with a big Wine Mom t-shirt and people would have been like, yes, of course you are. But if I had showed up with a Canna Mom t-shirt and was holding a joint, it would have been a whole different reaction to who I am and what my who would have accepted my children. So this is like my New England mentality. Mm-hmm. But now I exist, you exist, we all exist here, and we're talking about it. We're just changing the culture by existing. So that's really hopeful for your nieces.
Yeah, and for my friends that have children, majority of my friends have children, and they have 2, 3, 4, some of
them. So are they coming to you for like ideas?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have friends that have said, I'm going into a dispensary. I've never been in one. What should I get? This is what I'm like, okay, well, so we'll talk about it, right? So it's good because I can kind of educate a little bit.
There's an army of us. I take my friends in too because it's still intimidating, again, with the compliance. You can't look in. You have to show your ID 2 or 3 times. It's very expensive. You have to use cash or your debit cards, and it's just a lot of product. So you need people like us to take you in because it is a little overwhelming because of the regulation. All right, Melissa, how does it work in your family? How old kids and what kind of conversations are you having?
I have 2 very age diverse. I have a 22-year-old and I have a 9-year-old.
So it's a different conversation.
Different conversation. I have a lockbox. It's stuff for mom. The young one doesn't really see it. And I am not a smoker. So if I'm consuming, because despite the regulations, at the end of the day, it looks like candy, I try to consume out of her range of area. But I know we'll start having that conversation soon. Mm-hmm. She knows I work in cannabis. I don't know that she understands what that means, but she knows that I help keep people safe. Mm. The 22-year-old has, when I got the job in cannabis, all of a sudden I learned that she was a cannabis user. It's actually opened up a different bond of conversation and trust.
I love that.
Which is great. And randomly, occasionally, she'll be like, okay, mom, you're cool enough. You want to come smoke with me? And I'm like, okay, tonight, hon, you go have a good time with your friends. So I appreciate that.
It's a whole new bonding.
It is, and
it's a different conversation because when I was young, we would have been hiding in the closet, trying to spray ourselves, make sure no one got to know. It was actually the opposite because you probably wanted to talk to your mom, but you needed to stay as far away as possible because God forbid she should smell it on you.
Yes.
And it's similar to my nieces having a drink with their mom now that they're in college, right? Really.
And I always talk about making it through the pandemic. I'd rather be locked down with stoners than drinkers. That was my experience.
Yes. And now that I'm there, I can definitely see why that would be better.
What about your husband? Does your husband smoke or consume? Or are you?
He's a whiskey guy and he's perfectly content. But I really prefer the cannabis. 5 milligrams and 20 minutes and I'm at a 2 Cosmo happy without any of the bad effects.
So what's your preferred way to consume? Like, what's your favorite?
I really enjoy the gummies or the drink mixes where you can kind of drop a dehydrated THC oil and mix it up, whether it's flavored or whether I add it to something that has flavor. So it's a flavorless version. I like those because it's cannabis on the go, and I find it very soothing. I occasionally put it in a fancy glass.
Even I think for women's events, I always talk about this, hosting women's events. If you want to introduce people, the beverages are so accessible because we're used to drinking things at an event. And the effect can be very nominal. And that you can have like a 5 milligram, a 2 milligram. I think they're a really good introduction. I know everyone always starts with gummies because gummies are there. But I don't know. There's a lot of other ways to try it, ladies. If you want to try it, it's good. And Rebecca, do you have a favorite way to consume?
I really don't have a favorite way.
Okay.
I do
just
love...
enjoy.
I love my pre-rolls because I'm lazy and I do like to have an edible. It helps me sleep sometimes at night, depending on what's going on in my brain, right? Mm-hmm. That day. But yeah, and I actually just bought a new, it's actually right next to me, a new salve that I was going to try because I had like a little kink in my neck and didn't want to smell like Ben Gay.
That's right.
I thought, why not try this? Right?
So it's a salve. So which is
it is? Yes.
Is it good? Yeah. I interviewed the woman who've invented treatables, and she sent me this lotion, transdermal cream for my pets to calm them down. But it's
How
just like They're fine, but I had a kink in my neck last night and I used it because it's just great. So I'm sure my cats are very calm too. All right, ladies. That was quick. Let's see. Yeah, children. All right. So if there's a business out there, you're in Massachusetts, you're somewhere in the world and they want to connect with you, what kind of services are you offering for people looking for help? And again, how can they connect with you?
A to Z compliance services, whether you need a review of your SOPs or somebody to draft them, or whether you're looking for site locations and need to get through local. We do it all. And you can find us at cobblestone.solutions. And Rebecca, you are...
Yeah, absolutely. So she nailed everything on the head. We do everything from operational assistance to inspections and audits, training. And we can work with our clients based on where they are in the process. And that, I think, is the most important thing for people to hear, because everyone's in a different phase and a different light in the industry. And we also have been working in different states and successfully, which we're both thrilled about. And you can reach us through cobblestone.solutions and our email addresses as well.
And I'll be in the show notes. And this is like the real world. Cannabis is like the real world, but a little upside down. And you need specialists because this is a really fast evolving industry with a lot of specific little quirks. So you want people to know those quirks because the details can matter, right, ladies?
Huge.
Absolutely.
Huge. Okay.
Make a difference.
Make a huge difference. Okay. Thank you again, Rebecca and Melissa, for joining us today on the Canna Mom Show. So that's another show for my guests. And of course, my Canna Bro, David Yaz, and our Canna Mom Show team. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to the Canna Mom Show. We're on a mission to enhance the impact women have on the emerging cannabis industry by sharing and preserving their stories of love, kindness, wisdom, and hope. Thank you for listening and sharing the inspiring stories of these amazing women building this new industry. So together, we will crush the stigma around cannabis and caregivers. I'm your host, Joyce Gerber. This is the Canna Mom Show, and we are a production of Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Season 1 of Dope History is now available at dopehistory.com. Dope History weaves you through the lives of those who have been touched by cannabis or have had an influence on the events that shaped our laws or relationships with this plant. You'll hear tales from Frenchie Cannoli, Keith Strop, Eddie Lepp, Tom Alexander, Ed Rosenthal, Wolf Seagall, Jorge Cervantes, and Tommy Chong. Available now at dopehistory.com.